the sometimes uncomfortable power of philanthropy. Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit, and it is listener-supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We'll have that charity discussion in just a moment, but first, the $85 billion compromise in Washington that should keep another federal shutdown at bay. The deal increases some government fees while not raising taxes. It saves money on some federal pensions. And the key thing is that it would stop some of the forced cuts to education and the military under the so-called sequester. Jim Kessler, VP for Policy at Third Way, a centrist think tank, says plenty of uncertainty remains.
What can unravel is what's always been the problem in these budget deals, and that is that House Republicans, particularly conservative ones, might walk away. And there's already some evidence that they're not happy. But I think the likelihood is that this deal is a deal and we're going to see it through, and it's a good thing. You know, it's a modest deal, but it's an important one.
Some connected to the Tea Party worry the deal relies on promises to cut future spending that might not be kept. Many Democrats are unhappy that unemployment benefits will not get extended past this month for more than a million unemployed. Hilton, a venerable but privately held hotel brand, until tomorrow, when Hilton stock trades for the first time in a bid to raise $2 billion, they moved up the IPO by a day. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains why.
Hilton Worldwide oversees more than 4,000 hotels, but it owns less than half the actual real estate, and that may not be such a bad thing.
The business of managing franchising hotels is a fantastic business.
Chad Molman is an equity analyst for Morningstar. He says managing franchises doesn't require much investment and expenses are low.
They typically get royalties of 4-5% of sales. It's almost pure profit.
Growth outside the U.S. has taken off. Ryan Melliker tracks lodging companies for a boutique investment bank called MLV & Company.
You're seeing the Hilton brands grow in China, India, Latin America, Russia at an alarming rate.
In this country, demand for hotel rooms is up, but the supply has remained almost flat with little new hotel construction. That's good for companies like Hilton, but not so much for consumers. Over the next few years, analysts expect hotel room prices will continue to rise. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Marketplace is listener-supported. I know that just goes in one ear and out the other, but it means it is supported by listeners like you. So to keep our coverage compelling, up-to-date, up-to-the-minute, if you can, make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, will support your daily dose of business insight from us. Help us keep you up-to-date and well-informed wherever you are. You can donate by going to marketplace.org by the end of the year, December 31st. Thanks. Not long ago, Peter Buffett sent a frisson through the world of philanthropy with an op-ed piece in the New York Times saying a lot of charity gets it wrong. Buffett, a musician, composer, and author, presides over a major philanthropy along with his spouse, Jennifer. Peter even uses the term charitable industrial complex.
There's this industry, essentially, around very real issues, but done in a way that is has an element of a self-serving quality, and it's certainly a perpetuating quality.
Peter and Jennifer's foundation is largely funded by $1 billion kicked in by Peter's dad, a man named Warren, although Warren does not advise the foundation. The foundation works to empower girls and women globally and to foster locally focused economies. Jennifer and Peter told me philanthropies have to watch out for the unintended consequences of their giving.
First of all, I think going overseas to get labor for increasingly lower prices and resources and things like that, which then can devastate a community or a region. But then even when NGOs go into communities and they get staff gets paid a certain wage or whatever, and it completely then offsets the wages of the people living there, and then they can't afford to pay their rent in a certain area, and then all these NGO workers displace the people that live there and set the whole thing out of balance. I mean, those kind of unintended consequences, I think, happen all the time, all over the world.
I was reading your piece in the Times, Peter, and you concluded, it seemed to me, that no charitable project can solve the big problems of shelter for people, access to water, health care, stopping sex trafficking. But solve is a big word. You know that saying, the perfect is the enemy of the good.
Right.
I mean, you don't think that philanthropy, if it can't solve, can help a whole lot?
Well, therein lies the rub. There is bleeding that should be stopped. There are beds that should be in domestic shelters. There's food that should be in food pantries. There are things in the here and now that should be happening for sure. But we have the opportunity, we meaning anyone in larger philanthropic circles, to go upstream and take big chances on how to solve these problems. There should be money going into, like I said, the here and now. But if we don't believe they can be solved, we're sort of in the wrong business. But some of us have to be idealists and say, you know what, and also pragmatic in terms of let's keep walking up the stream and find the problem and stop it.
I have to ask, Peter, did you ever hear from your dad about the New York Times piece? Did Warren Buffett call disinviting you from Christmas after
right,
reading this?
Exactly. It's funny how some people think that for sure, but he did call and he was very proud of me and very proud of it. You know, my dad likes to, as I say, call a spade a shovel. And so he was, I think, very happy with and impressed by the truth telling that went on in the piece.
I don't think the sector thinks that it's perfect, but I think it's very difficult because we all like to tell the happy success stories and feel good about what we're doing. It's more difficult to have the conversations about the difficulty of problems, about, you know, the gaps, about the incongruencies of the whole sector and the fact that, you know, people get to decide their own sort of self-imposed metrics of excellence and success and whatnot. And it's not well coordinated at all. So it was a good call out. And I think the response generally has been really positive and very constructive.
Given the critique here, I also wanted to know why the Buffetts keep giving.
I remember being in Rwanda and I kept going to household after household and hut after hut. And the heads of the household were 15-year-old girls. And the world was on these girls' shoulders. And I thought, oh my goodness, no one is talking about this.
You know, only a girl will be the mother of every child. Nobody seems to argue with me on that point, which is good. You know, when, again, at 12 years old, she's making the choices between being, these are not choices. I should say she's not making the choices between being sold, being the utility for the household, getting the wood, cooking the meals, taking care of the sick. Almost everything, again, falls on the girl. And if you want generational change, you support her. You give her opportunities, give her choices, give her a chance to be a teenager even.
When you talk to philanthropists about their motivations, I mean, this is a key thing. They'll say, I give because I saw a need and I couldn't just sit here doing nothing, needed to respond, and they respond with their money. But there must be other reasons. To quote a Peter Buffett line, conscience laundering one's conscience.
Indeed. And any intelligent person at some point is reflective enough as they go to sleep at night to think about what effect their actions may be having on the world. And even conscience laundering sounds harsher than I may even mean it in some ways, because these are not necessarily bad people. They're caught up in a system that does some bad things. And as they probably get older and they start to see the effects, they might start to stretch their minds and say, you know, I think we need to do something about this.
I've always wanted to ask you this, even before it gelled for us to sit down and talk about this. Does the ability to give, to do philanthropy, give you power?
I mean, yeah, Jen's over there nodding a bit. Yes, and yes, it does. I mean, but that's the frustration to some extent, because there's so many passionate people doing amazing things, and here you are holding the purse strings.
I mean, I think if somebody has all the power and all the resources, and you want to stay in the good graces of that institution, you're going to take very few risks. You're going to tell as many good stories as you can, but not necessarily the ones that would really help inform better philanthropy for more people or for an issue. So I think it's a difficult dynamic.
By the way, before we go, this can't be true. Did you find out about the $1 billion by a fax?
That is true.
You got a fax showed up?
Yes, exactly, which gives you the technical prowess of my dad, first and foremost. But it was also 2006, so we'll give him a little bit of a pass.
And what'd you do? Did you call Jennifer?
You called me.
Yeah, so I called
Jennifer. Coming out of the subway in Bryant Park, and you said, you better come home. We got this fax, and I'll tell you what it is. But I sort of, I think, screamed on Madison Avenue and said, oh, my goodness, our lives just changed.
Jennifer Buffett, co-chair and president of the Novo Foundation, and Peter Buffett, composer and chair of the Novo Foundation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
We're putting up all of our philanthropy series at marketplace.org. Search for A Lot to Give at Marketplace. And while you're there, you can check out our interactive feature that lets you figure out which famous person has the same charity priorities as you. Apparently, I'm like actor Colin Firth, but I get that all the time. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
A confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.